Hello and welcome to Ahead of the Curve, the podcast from Acadia, where we take time to get under the skin of the risk, margin and collateral industry, to dig deep and present topical perspectives and insights on this hugely important sector. In this edition of Ahead of the Curve, we're going to take a closer look at Acadia's role in developing and delivering complex risk services for businesses. The final phases of uncleared margin rules, or UMR, have brought many hundreds of firms into regulatory scope. Typically, these are small to mid-sized buy-side firms that have minimal experience or resource available in the complexities of risk calculations and managing two-way margining. In response to this challenge, the market, led by Acadia, has developed a suite of risk services that firms can utilize in a cost-effective and standardized manner. These services have been successful for a number of reasons, and in this podcast, we'll explore the reasons for that success. We'll look at why firms have gravitated towards Acadia's solutions, and we'll ask what's in store for the future of this business. Now, to chew through these points, I'm delighted to be joined by expert guests from Acadia. Donald Gallagher is co-head of Quantitative Services Division at Acadia. Stuart Smith is co-head of Business Development for Risk and Data. And Jake Ullman is a Business Development Analyst. Donald, Stuart, Jake, welcome to you all.
Hi, John. Delighted to be here. Hello.
Hi, John.
Well, it's great to have you all on board to talk on this very focused subject, and I think a really interesting one as well. So, Donald, let me come to you first. Can you speak about the unprecedented growth that Acadia's risk business has experienced over the last few years? 2 years ago, could you have imagined we'd be where we are today?
Oh, my goodness. In short, no. I don't think I would have foreseen where we got to in the end. First of all, where are we? We're calculating for over 100 firms now, sensitivities and backtesting, and that represents more than half of the phase five and phase six firms. I just checked the numbers again. We calculated for over 1.2 million trades in the last year. And if you told me that that's what we were going to be doing when we started this, I would have said, I don't think we'll get to that scale. It's been quite remarkable.
Has it come as a surprise to you, Donald?
It has. I mean, if you think back, we started this tiny bit of old history here. What is now the Quant Services Division of Acadia was a firm called Quaternion. I was the founder and CEO of that firm, and we first partnered with Acadia in 2018 because Acadia felt there would be a need to provide risk services to the phase five and six firms. And if you said to me that we would be covering the range of trades that we're covering in the markets that we're covering them, I don't think I would have believed you. And if you ask yourself, well, why what happened? How did it come about? I think it was two things. First of all, it was the uniqueness of Acadia, because Acadia, in my experience, many firms behave like vendors. I come up with products and sell them. Acadia is different. It's a mutual organization that looks to solve industry problems. So when you think about this problem of how do we do margining for 200-300 firms simultaneously, and you do it centrally, That's a problem that needs to be solved. And if you tackle it as a problem that needs to be solved rather than a product that needs to be developed, you kind of get to where we get to, because we said yes to everything because we knew we had to calculate for the whole industry. So rather than saying, we cover rates and FX, or we cover rates, FX and credit, because that's where most trades are, we took it from the perspective of, no, we have to be able to handle everything in every market. Now, we were never concerned about that from a technical perspective, because at Quaternion, which then became the Quant Services Division, we were very confident about the risk engine that we developed over the last decade. But the big area in which we had to work was really twofold. First of all, it's assembling the market data, because if you think about the scale of the OTC market across not just rates, FX and credit, but also equities.
I mean, that's a huge universe, isn't it, Donald? A huge universe.
Yeah, firms operating in every market. I mean, you're not just talking about the London Stock Exchange. You're talking about all of the big financial or not so big financial centers all around the world. And if you think about the range of equities on which against which OTC derivatives could be written, or equity options, then you're into getting the volatilities. or you think of commodities and you think about the number of commodities that are traded globally, it's remarkable. And that's not to mention bond derivatives and the range of bondizings that we've had to source. So I think it's only when you think about it as a collective problem that needs to be solved centrally in one place for the entire industry that you get to the sort of place where we ended up getting to. But I don't think we would have foreseen either the scale or the demand in the industry for a central utility like mutual service.
So, Stuart, then what do you attribute to Acadia's success here?
I think it's really important to consider kind of how does Acadia see the problem and what's the end point? And for us, a big difference is that the end point isn't calculating sensitivities. For us, the end point is reconciling sensitivities with counterparties and being able to deliver good margin calls. And that's a real difference because it changes your point of view around what's important in the problem and the level of customer service that you need to be able to provide. And it aligns our needs much more accurately with the needs of our clients. And that's what our clients need. They don't really care ultimately what the sensitivities are. They care that they reconcile, that they get a clean process, and that they're able to accurately, you know, send and receive margin as and when they need. And the fact that we're aligned on that means that our teams are really focused on being able to provide the data that you need, the quality calculations that you need to be able to deliver that. But then more importantly, being able to step in when things don't work, fix them rapidly, and make sure that we go forward with a good process. And when you think about what that's generated for us, it's a process, which I know Jake's heavily involved in, around how we, you know, calculate those sensitivities and then how we immediately get those reconciliations back and that ability to be able to improve the data quality again. I think when you look at the breadth as well of what the team's been able to achieve, you know, the number of different types of instruments that we're covering is quite phenomenal. You know, many of the engines out there, you know, are covering basic instruments, are covering a range of things that people do. But they're not touching on some of the more exotic things, whether that's, you know, basket trades, rainbow options, you know, a big plethora of trades that sit out there, which are, you know, non-standard, which come, you know, once or twice from different clients over time. Or just genuinely bespoke, because that's what people need. And particularly in phase six, we've seen a lot more of the range of instruments coming into the system and pushing us to continue to develop out the scope in which we run with.
I think you raised something interesting there, Stuart, which I think is also a part of what you can do as a central utility, which is, you know, you talk about the OTC market, which is the last great non-standardized financial market, precisely because there are so many bespoke instruments out there, all sorts of baskets and options and exotic payoffs. And, you know, in doing what we had to do, which is onboard the positions of 100 firms across that range, we ended up developing a data standard, which is what we call OREXML, which is a standard way of representing this last great menagerie in the financial markets of the OTC. Markets. And I think having that and doing it at scale and having teams that were doing it at scale day after day, week after week, and onboarding firms is part of the definitely a key part of the success of the service.
The last great menagerie. That's a great picture that you paint there, Donal. I like that. Jake, let me come to you and let's just talk in a bit more detail here. Tell us more about the constant cycle of pricing model testing, the feedback and the improvement loop there. How does all this work in respect of what we're discussing at the moment?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, to provide some context, the sensitivities that Stuart was talking about, that feeds in to our clients' exposure calculations every day that they use for their regulatory margin calls. And when there is a margin dispute with a counterparty, firms look to our service called IAM Exposure Manager to reconcile those calculations against their dealers. As we set up clients, you know, in the onboarding process, we're not only teaching them how to investigate these differences, but we also stand by them to help. And I think that really, as Stuart was mentioning, it attributes a lot of our success to the fact that we do stand behind our clients. And we really are there to help kind of every day looking, helping resolve those disputes when possible, we can work together. you know, frequently the issue does come down to something very simple, you know, the ORE XML standard that Donald mentioned that we're kind of building. Things might just be misrepresented on that, you know, the trade economics of a strike spread or a rate. Sometimes those are inputted improperly. Maybe a payer indication on a swap fixed or floating leg is noted incorrectly. And those fixes are very simple. You know, we can get those resolved in a matter of an hour or so with our client. And then the next day when we receive that information from the client, it's fixed permanently. But if the data has been provided correctly in the investigation process, it then kind of moves to a deeper dive into the actual model differences that exist between our clients, so the Acadia model, and the dealers themselves. And if there is an issue on the Acadia side, we're very proud of the fact that we can quickly identify those necessary corrections, kind of create those specifications, and actually schedule and kind of implement those works in a matter of a week or so.
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting point. Donal mentioned the normalization of the trade data, which is an important aspect, but also you think of the market data that underpins that as well. Essentially, we have one set of market data that's been validated by 100 plus regulations every day, run against many of the biggest banks in the world. And I think that's completely unique in that you get so many effectively opinions pushing back and making corrections, making improvements to that market data set. It probably makes it one of the, you know, cleanest market data sets there is, because of the way that it's challenged every day, it's disputed when it's wrong, and it's fixed. And again, it feeds through back into that quality that you're able to put into the calculations themselves, but also sets Acadia up for the future in terms of other things you might want to do with that market data set that we've invested so much in.
I fully agree. And I think that only was possible, the feedback loop of having that with our clients, and then also having incredibly intelligent people, flexible people at Acadia. It really birthed into an incredible product of our risk generator service.
It's funny to say that. If you go back to some of the discussions we had in 2018, 2019, as we were starting to stand the service up, there were plenty of people who said, you know, that task is a bridge too far. That task of, well, first of all, if you can model all of the, you know, the vast menagerie I referred to earlier of derivatives, that's a hell of a hard problem. Then you've got to standardize the trade terms, the trade economics across this range of trades. And even if you master that, you've got to pull together all the data across all of the markets and exchanges and places where bonds are traded. And many, many people said that's a bridge too far. That can't be done. I think it helped us that there was a lead in over several years. You know, that was 2018 was, as we stood the service up, I think was phase three, phase four, when we got the initial clients in, and then we had a chance to work. Phase five was, you know, I think 40 firms, and all of that gave us time to build and to get it right and to work on the quality. So at the end of the day, what people said couldn't be done was done, but it took time.
It's quite an achievement. And Jake, is there anything else you'd add to that?
Yeah, I think the last note is really the fact that product that came out of that feedback loop that we've been talking about, it doesn't sit really behind a black box as a lot of other solutions tend to sit. You know, the things like the calculation process, the market data, the pricing curves, fixing information, cash flows, all of that we kind of expose to our client to some degree, and give them an insight into how the calculations performed. And we find that this makes it incredibly useful, not only for them, but also the actual resolution process a lot easier when we're teaching them how to resolve those differences. And all these aspects are basically available via a nice, easy-to-use UI, which has also been very powerful and necessary for an area that we've been looking into, index decomposition and kind of investigating those decomposition differences. And ultimately, I think this product has just been truly a game changer for our clients.
So, Stuart, I'd like you to take up that point that Jake has just raised there on index decomposition. It's a fascinating phrase. Talk to us more about what it amounts to.
Sure. The ISDA SIM methodology allows for two methods when calculating trades that have underlying equity indexes. One of those is called the standard method, where you consider everything at the index level, so just taking the price of the index and calculating the risk on that basis. The other approach is when you look at the underlying equity components of that index, and that's called the decomposition method. It's not clear from when you read the regulation whether one of those would be beneficial or not. However, when you work through the maths and the weighting of those, you know, there's a very clear preference for the decomposition method in almost all cases. On top of that, you can also get a benefit from the natural hedges which may exist within your portfolio, where you've got similar equities in different directions as well. So it can make a very significant difference to the total exposure that a firm's seeing. You know, that can be between 30 and 50% in some cases, but it's quite dependent on the particular indexes and the hedges in the portfolio itself. The biggest challenge that people actually see in computing in this way is getting hold of the data. And many of the smaller firms don't have this data, or certainly don't have it in a way which they can use it for this type of calculation. And therefore they get stuck a little bit in trying to execute this. And that's somewhere where we can help significantly, because we can pool together and bring one set of data again. You know, we can work with a wide range of index providers, procure that data, make it available to people for doing this calculation without them having to go to the effort of procuring it themselves and making sure they've got the ability to share it, etc. On top of that, many of the banks also write proprietary indexes, which they then provide derivative trades on. And again, we're working with our clients, who are, you know, also some of those largest banks, to make sure that data is available. They're in fact very keen to see this method used more in many cases, because of the reduction in the level of margin that they have to pay. So they're working with us to be able to provide that data, so that we can then, you know, get good calculations that reconcile on both sides.
Stuart raises a really interesting point there, which is about, you know, efficiency. And you know, one way of being more efficient is in using index decomposition, which just more accurately reflects the risk in the portfolio rather than treating it as a single index. But you know, if you think about where is initial margin going now, the goal of firms initially is to comply, because it's a regulation, you must comply with it. But then your next reaction, as soon as you've complied, is to look at it and go, say, well, okay, can I be more efficient? Because I know SIM 2.5 is coming, and with the increase in volatility, that's probably going to give rise to more SIM. Can I be more efficient in things like index composition and things like spreading my trades out more equally among my counterparties? And I think that's where, you know, SIM is going for the next few years, is going to be about efficiency and improvement in light of the regulation.
So let's just start to wrap this up and think about what lies ahead for Acadia's risk business. Donal, let me come to you first on that.
I mean, the short answer is we're going to be responsive to client demand. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the need for efficiency, and it manifests itself in several different ways. Decomposition is one that's important. It's very relevant in the equity space. We know for sure that pre-trade, which is something that we've released as of September, which is the ability to look at the impact of a trade, multiple counterparties, before you put it on, and decide from an initial margin perspective where's the most efficient place to place that trade. But then you go on to, well, okay, now I have my book of trades on. How do I optimize? Are there things I can do to more efficiently spread the risk among the counterparties in order to reduce initial margin? And then should you look at initial margin on its own, or should you be looking at the lifetime cost, not just of margin, but of funding and all the other things that impact on the economics of a trade? If you're a bank and regulated, of course, you have to hold capital. You know, it's a different situation if you're on the buy side. Each different part of the industry has different constraints that it will want to optimize to. And we know for a fact that that's the way clients are starting to think about how do they manage initial margin for the next few years.
And Stuart, I'll give the final word to you on this. Your thoughts about what lies ahead for Acadia's risk business?
Yeah, I mean, maybe two things. So one, you know, it's worth saying that while everything moves forward. And phase six sounds like an endpoint. It isn't really an endpoint. You know, around about 400 firms came on between phase five and phase six. But 900 firms, well, in fact, more than 900 are still monitoring. I.e., they're still below the threshold by which they actually need to come in and actively participate in SIM. Now, as those trade volumes grow and those clients get closer to the threshold, you know, a lot of those are going to come back into scope. And in many ways, phase six is going to extend over a period of time. You know, it's not a simple go live that happened in September this year. It's something that's probably going to have a long tail of 1 to 2 years as people who should be in SIM, but it's just going to take them some time to get to the level where it's important and they have to be active in the way they're managing it. But the other side to that, maybe more from Acadia's point of view, is when you look at the infrastructure that we've built around what it is that we do today, and we talked about the market data that we've, you know, spent the last 3-4 years curating, error checking, finding issues, fixing them, and making sure that it's clean and ready to go for what we need. It opens up a huge wealth of possibilities for where we can go next. You know, there's numerous risk calculations, I think, which can benefit from the type of approach which KD has brought to initial margin, and where we can roll the engine out, which we know has got good capabilities across a wide range of risk types, to really deliver that same high customer care, high quality calculation, and results analysis for people. So, yeah, I think it's a very exciting place to be. It's a very exciting time. Initial margin certainly not done, and in the rearview mirror, it's still very active and will continue to be. But yeah, looking forward to how we can expand the scope of what we do and get involved in more areas of what our clients need.
So I think one of the aspects I know firms are going to be looking at is backtesting, because we saw very recently that the PRA, that's the UK Prudential Regulatory Authority, which obviously is one of the leading global regulators, they wrote to the CROs of firms that are in scope for initial margin and asked some very specific questions about the performance of initial margin. Is it adequate in every case? And they specifically asked firms to report back on their findings. And really, the only way you can, not the only way, but the main way you would do that is through backtesting. Because, and this is widely known and discussed in the industry, SIM is broadly conservative, but there are specific cases where it may not be conservative, and specific portfolios. And what the PRA said was that, particularly in light of phase five and phase six and the, you know, the proliferation of new types of firms using initial margin, that there might be specific portfolios that would expose areas of SIM that may not be conservative. And the best way of identifying that is to backtest, and you backtest individual portfolios, not at the global sort of industry level, where of course it is conservative, but specific portfolios. And where you find under conservatism, the PRA is asking what firms are doing to remediate that. What additional buffers are they holding? Now, backtesting is something that Acadia has been live with since 2018. Again, we backtest for many firms, and we see on a weekly, quarterly, monthly basis, you know, we see that conservatism most of the time, but we see specific portfolios where you see lack of conservatism. And you know, from those outputs, it becomes very clear what you can do to remediate. But I think that focus on SIM and idiosyncratic portfolios will be a thing. Not just for the UK and the PRA, but I know that letter has been picked up and has been looked at by the other big regulatory authorities. But there is, you know, there is an easy solution at hand, which leverages all of the same feeds and the same market data and benefits from all of the mutualization that we've talked about, which is the beauty of a centralized industry solution.
Well, it has been an exciting journey so far and promises to continue to be one as we look into the future. But unfortunately, now we're out of time. Donal, Stuart, Jake, thank you all very much indeed for joining us. And thank you for listening to Ahead of the Curve. We'd like to know what you think, so please do get in touch and share your thoughts. And you can find out more about Acadia by going to acadia.inc. But until next time, it's goodbye from us.